right. Welcome back to the Calling Hours podcast. We are so glad that you are taking some time to chime in today. I'm really excited because we have two guests on our show. We are continuing our series of talking with funeral providers from throughout the country. And today I'm really excited because we have Dan Ford with us, who is the president of Alderson Ford and Buckmiller and Ford Mangachi Funeral Homes, and his daughter, Emma, who is their administrative assistant and social media guru. Thank you both so much for being here. We're really excited.
Thank you for having us. We're excited about this.
I got to say, Emma, I am the daughter of a funeral director and grew up in the funeral home. So I feel a great affinity and kinship with you. And I'm excited to hear kind of what your experiences have been, you know, working alongside your dad. But let's start with both of you kind of talking a little bit about your experience growing up in the funeral home. Dan, in particular, let's start with you. Did you always know that you wanted to go into the business?
Well, I can say that growing up as a funeral director's kid in FDK, that I always had my father up on a pedestal. And throughout my education and growing up, I knew that this is something that I wanted to do. I did a lot of things that he did throughout the year, some volunteer work, things along those lines. But 12 days out of high school, I was off to mortuary school. A resounding yes, I think, would be the answer to that.
Has there ever been a moment where you've questioned whether this was the fit?
I did. And believe it or not, there was a time, and I know I'm kind of showing my age here, but there was a point in time where there were not a lot of funeral service careers available. And in fact, right before I was getting ready to graduate mortuary school, there wasn't enough room to bring me on board with what was known as the Alderson Funeral Homes at that point in time. And so I had some decisions to make, and I was fortunate enough to do an apprenticeship about 30 miles away, which to some is not a big deal, but when it turns into an hour commute or an hour and a half commute one way, it's very difficult. So I had actually left the full-time profession for a period of time, and I was a career firefighter, and found with that schedule, I was able to do both. So I had debated whether this was the right move for me or not. Being able to buy the funeral home from my dad a little over a decade ago, I knew this was the right fit. And jokingly, I had some friends tell me that when I was leaving the fire department, that I was a better funeral director than a firefighter. Kind of one of those comments where you're like, I don't know, what did you mean by that? But in any event, I knew that this is where I belonged.
Yeah. Emma, I'm curious from your perspective, growing up in the funeral service, how did you find your way back to the funeral home?
So for him, it was definitely a calling. For me, the story is a little bit different. Growing up, I spent a lot of time at the funeral homes, mostly to clean, actually. But throughout my time there, I was kind of just trying to navigate whether or not this was something I wanted to take up in my future. I actually decided to go to school for social work. So my plan was to become a social worker, and I kind of was starting to lean away from the whole funeral service industry. But after almost 4 full years of college, I decided that social work was not the path I wanted to take. So I graduated with a general studies degree, and immediately my dad offered me a position at the funeral home. And I did not know what to think of it, but I was like, you know what? This seems like a great opportunity. And as soon as I got my foot in the door, I was like, wow, this is not what I expected. But I feel like I'm learning new things every single day, and I'm still trying to figure out if I actually want to go to mortuary school and become a licensed funeral director.
So we're not pushing her.
Yeah.
We're not pushing her.
I'm still trying
to push her
out. Yeah.
I've been working here since June, so it hasn't been too long. But so far, I'm enjoying it. I am.
Are you seeing overlap? You know, social work and funeral service, I could see there being some kind of commonalities in the person that is called to be a social worker and the person that's called to be a funeral provider. Has that been your experience?
Certainly. I feel that there's such a big connection there. Just having empathy for people. I learned a different side of myself studying social work, and being in the funeral home, that's so important to be able to have empathy for people and be able to communicate with them, like be at their level and show compassion and things like that. That's what social work was all about in college. That's all I was learning about, having good interactions with people and trying to understand where they're at and meet them where they're at. So there's definitely overlap for sure.
I could see that. And Dan, it's not just Emma. Your son, Ryan, is also in the business. Is that correct?
So he's not directly in the business. He will help out on occasion, comes in. He's one that felt that the funeral profession was not necessarily for him. But both, we've made this a family affair. I mean, Ryan, our son, and you met Emma, obviously, but and my wife, Danielle, we all are involved in different fashions of our profession and our business. So Ryan, I would consider him on the outskirts, just coming in and jumping in where he's needed and willing to jump in and fix something behind the scenes or be the IT guy or whatever he needs to do, or simply just to point out, okay, here's where you need to upgrade X, Y, and Z. So we've truly made this a family affair for us without, you know, Danielle, my wife, and I pushing our children into the profession.
Yeah, my experience with my dad, who I think would have loved to see me become a funeral director, is that even if there isn't that pressure, there is still the delight that you experience when your children feel called, even if it's just on a part-time kind of basis, to do the good work that you have made your life's work. So I would love to hear a little bit more about what it feels like as a dad to be able to work every day with Emma, to be able to work on occasion with Ryan, to have Danielle part of the business. Tell us what the experience of it being truly a family operation means to you.
So very much like a lot of us funeral directors, we started out, and sometimes we still are, washing cars, scrubbing the white walls, things of that sort. Our children, as Emma alluded to before, our children would come in and clean the funeral homes. That was their responsibility once or twice a week. Emma, as recently as 2 days ago, was still doing it. So, you know, it's those things that this is our second home. I mean, we have multiple rooftops, but we treat them all as our second homes. So to have your children be with you as you're trying to help others is so, so powerful. I remember, I believe it was last Christmas, where Emma and I were the only two healthy ones in the house. My wife and my son were sick. And so Emma and I went to Mass and I gave her the preemptive speech that undoubtedly the answering service is going to call 10 minutes into Mass. And so sure enough, it happened. And as we came out of church at the end of Mass, I took the phone call and handled things and went back into church. But at the end of Mass, I still remember Emma saying, "What's going on? What happened?" And I explained how Mrs. Jones had passed away at home and we needed to go to the house. And Emma very quickly said, "Well, who's going to go with you?" And I said, "Well, I need to find somebody." And without missing a beat, she said, "Well, I will go." And Danielle and I have, my wife and I have done everything in our power to try and ensure that our staff, when we can be home with their families. And we cover the holidays so that, you know, we can leave, you know, our staff with their families and not have an interrupted holiday, as our Christmas Mass, midnight Mass, was interrupted. Just the same, it means the world to have my son come in and tell me, "Okay, Dad, this is obsolete. You need to fix this or you need to do that," as a fresh set of eyes. Or having Emma come in and tell me on her first day here that, "Dad, I found 37 things wrong with the website and we need to modify this now." So it's basically a fresh set of eyes and somebody that, you know, I know I could trust my daughter. I know I could trust my son. Danielle is basically going to tell me what I'm doing right, wrong, or indifferent, like as any partner would or should. So I'm unbelievably fortunate to have Emma here on a day-to-day, have Ryan in the wings to clue me in as to what's what, and Danielle to lean on when I go home, and I have a less than perfect day.
Well, I love that story about Christmas because I can absolutely relate to it. The number of Christmases that we celebrated in January because the funeral home was busy and that's where my dad needed to be. Those were the people who needed him most on those days. But what's really lovely about your story is that you still got to celebrate Christmas with Emma. Like, it was different, but you spent the day together, right, serving together. And I think that's really one of the lovely things about being in funeral service with your family is that you're doing these hard things, but you're doing it alongside each other. And that feels less lonely.
Well, and when we took that individual into our care, it was not the norm because as we were doing so, the family was almost elbow to elbow. It was a very tight space. and they didn't want to leave the area, which we can understand. We appreciate that. But it was a curveball for Emma because the family was right there. And that empathy that she alluded to before automatically kicked in with her. I mean, just the way that her mannerisms and the way that she took care of things, I'll never forget that moment.
I think there's a, it's not really a personality. It's just a presence that the children who have grown up in funeral service have that is, it is just unlike anything else. There's a level of work ethic. There's a level of professionalism. There's a sense of reading the room. And I know that that's present in other professions. It's certainly not unique to funeral service, but I suspect, Emma, that that's absolutely true of you.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah. And I would be curious, what has your experience been? What does it feel like being the daughter of the owner and going into the business and kind of starting to be a professional in this space where you used to just be, you know, a family member who was helping out from time to time?
Right. He's always obviously been a role model to me as my dad, but now actually like working for him, he's even more of a role model to me. Seeing the way that he takes on everything he does, I'm like, I could never do that. I give you so much credit, but it's also really nice to be able to, I can just be real with him. And like, I know he'll always support me and I can always rely on him. Whereas if I had a different boss who wasn't my dad, that probably wouldn't be the case. That level of comfort wouldn't be there.
She has no problem being real, by the way.
So it's definitely a benefit to have him here because I just know that like, no matter what happens, he has my back and he'll be there for me. And it's just, it's a relief to have that feeling.
I love that. I'm so glad you feel supported in that. And I loved your dad's story about the 37 errors on the website. My dad's a funeral director, but he also has a cookie bakery that has become kind of his other job. And I often tell him, I'm like, don't tell people that your daughter works in marketing because once they see this website, they're not going to understand what happened. It's just, it's his thing. And, you know, there might be 37 things wrong with it, but he loves it. And that's what's important.
Yeah.
So I'd love to ask this question of both of you because I think you have such different perspectives. Emma, you're so new to the, you know, the experience of being a professional in the space. Dan, you've been around for a few years. What do you see as the biggest challenges in the space right now?
So I'll tell you that everybody has kind of a canned response with that when it comes to staffing and things of that sort that I alluded to before. In a time where I came into the profession and there were very few jobs available. One of the things that I'm finding as far as a difficulty level is balancing overhead and looking to ensure that the full traditional funeral that we talk about and we encourage people to have as far as viewing and things of that sort is still feasible and still in the reach of a family's finances. So trying to balance those things to still provide the same level while we have these essentially heavy overhead expenses. What we did in one of our communities recently is we merged with another funeral so that we didn't lose that opportunity to serve the family in the same way. In fact, we're actually, I feel that we've enhanced it by merging two funeral homes together in this one community of 35,000 people so that we could provide that same level of service without having that pressure of, okay, taxes went up by X and, you know, this is what this has gone up and this product is increased by, you know, X percent. It kind of takes the pressure off when you have the availability to share the same physical space and do the same amount of outreach to the community. And again, just watching that bottom line to ensure that you can maintain the level of benefits for your staff, ensure that there are pay increases on the regular and things of that sort. So that's what I have found. And yes, there's always going to be the canned response, but my response is essentially trying to balance the overhead.
I think that's a really interesting conversation. I think we talk a lot about managing expenses and burial and cremation rates. I don't know that we talk enough about affordability for the family. So I love that that's really where you centered it when you started talking about it. We want to make sure that we're offering a really good service and dignity and care for the deceased at a price that's affordable for these families. When you guys acquired the new funeral home, do you serve the same types of families at each location, or is one kind of more of a full service and the other is a slightly different option?
We do. Growing up, it used to be divided by faith. So we had, we were the Alderson Ford was the Protestant funeral home, and the Buckmiller Mangachi part was the Catholic funeral home. And that changed over time. In fact, I was baptized and brought up as Roman Catholic. So there's been the overlap and the merge and things of that sort as far as families using both of our services over time and merging this into the same existence. Essentially, we're serving 35,000 people, as I mentioned, but in a predominantly blue-collar town where there used to be a lot of manufacturing under the Uniroyal brand back in the day, and Timex not too far away, that sort of thing. We're still serving those blue-collar families that certainly are kind of restricted on some of the things that they can afford and they can do. And we do everything in our power to try and ensure that everything remains somewhat economical or as economical as it possibly can be.
It's so interesting. Our last guest in this series was Kim Hunter, who's up in Toronto, and his funeral home serves a very high-end clientele. And so the conversation I had with him was kind of how disorienting it was for his funeral directors in those conversations when price was not at all a factor. And I think that it's challenging on both ends, right? It's trying to be creative and serve the family that's sitting in front of you and what their needs are, and being able to flex that, I think, is the work of a really mature funeral home, a really mature funeral professional. Emma, I'm so curious how you would answer this question. I mean, what do you see as the biggest challenges?
I mean, I guess this is maybe because I'm younger and this is what I want to focus on, but just reaching younger generations and trying to convert everything that's kind of like been old school, like traditional, into social media and being online. I've been looking at a lot of different numbers and trying to just do research online to see what other funeral homes are doing in terms of just their presence online. And I've definitely gotten a lot of inspiration from seeing what other people are doing. But I just think it's so important for younger generations, because everyone is just constantly online, for us to have more accessible options and just make things easier for people who might want to fill out information online versus having to actually come to the funeral home or make a phone call. A lot of people would rather just do it through the website. So I guess just trying to figure out the best way to market ourselves online for people who are looking online to find information about us, that is like my main concern right now.
I would absolutely agree. And I think the challenging thing about funeral service and funeral service marketing in the digital space is that it's such a long ramp. You know, you're building a brand and starting to like familiarize consumers in the digital space with who you are and what you offer. And you're doing that for years, maybe before there's any kind of payoff. It's really hard to get to ROI in that. But those firms that are doing that now are not going to be left behind in 6 years when those families are ready to prearrange their parents.
Right.
When those millennials are the ones starting to make purchase decisions or nudging their parents towards making these purchase decisions. So it's great that you guys are focusing on that. And it's a hard question to wrestle with. Like, how do you represent a hospitality experience in a digital space?
Right.
That's tough.
Trying to get our message out there and have people communicate. And then you have different factions of the family that are tasked with doing different things, and having that flow with the direct person-to-person communication without having a keyboard in front of us. So trying to balance that is, I think we can all agree, is not the easiest thing.
No. And I think that exposes another challenge in the profession, which is just training.
Right.
How do you train your people? How do you teach them how to direct an arrangement conference and center the decedent and ask the right questions and gather the stories that help them design kind of a really meaningful farewell for that person and that family? Which I think kind of leads into one of my next questions, which is around the idea of personalization. So we talk a lot about that in this space. You know, that the families today are different than the families we were serving 20 years ago. You know, the standard 3-day service and visitation and things like that, the liturgy of that has started to kind of become less helpful or beneficial or desired by the consumers who are planning funerals today. What they really want is something that is unlike what their neighbor had, what their cousin had, what their grandma had 20 years ago. I love to talk about personalization with funeral directors because I like to ask what some of those meaningful standout services have been. And Dan, you've been in the business for so long that I would have to imagine you have so many stories.
Yeah, one that keep surfacing, and it's because it was when it was time to give my mother her send-off. Emma and I were in on this together, and Ryan and Danielle were, we kind of circled the wagons, and my mother suffered for 6 months with very aggressive cancer, even though she fought. During that time frame, during her fight, Ryan and Emma put together a playlist for her for when she went for treatment. And her playlist was all over the map. I mean, you had everything from Prince to Kiss to, I think Leonard Skinner was in there at one point. Any kind of Motown was in there. I mean, it was basically all over the map, every single genre you could possibly imagine. So when it came time for her wake, we definitely said, you know what? That's what's going to be piped in. We're via Bluetooth. This is what we're playing. And the looks on people's faces as they were standing in line to hear all this different music coming through the speakers of the funeral home, music that had never come through those speakers, I can tell you, and with all honesty, that it probably never will come through those speakers again. That was unbelievably powerful, but that was only a fraction of what we did. My mother was also a huge fan of the Peanuts, the comic strip Peanuts, yeah. Charlie Brown and Snoopy. So her home was decorated with dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of stuffed animal Snoopies. So we had the idea, and I don't remember where it came from, but the idea was that we went to her house, gathered up all of those Snoopies, and brought them to the funeral home and had them in every square inch of the funeral home for visitation, so that everybody, if they didn't know, if they were a friend of mine or a friend of the kids or what have you, they knew by the time that they left how much my mother loved Snoopy. So when it came time to give her final send-off, we basically took all but a handful of the Snoopies and put them in with my mom. And we're able to share that with everybody to let them know, this is what we're doing. This is something that's a little bit outside the lines, but we're going to call her outside the lines today. My mother was an educator, and she was a union president, very tough, very solid woman. And with my friends in our wonderful profession, I could have had pretty much any casket that I wanted. But my mother was a very vanilla person that didn't want a lot of frills. And so we picked out a casket that was kind of middle of the road for her, just because she wouldn't have wanted anything with any kind of pomp and circumstance. But the one thing that we did get a little pomp and circumstance with was she loved the show Chips with John the Motorcycle Cops from the California Highway Patrol. So we ensured that we had at least two motorcycle cops from two different communities there to lead her funeral procession, because she always loved that show. So little things, not huge outside of the lines, you know, as far as coloring outside the lines, but the little things, it's those things we had a lot of comments on after the fact about how cool it is that we did this and how cool it is that we did that. And we opened up some doors because there were some people that said, hey, remember what we did for your mom. Is it possible to play this during her, you know, my dad's service? Or, you know, I know you did that for your mom. Can we do that same thing? All of those little things kind of open up the doors for people that realize that they have options, that there's nothing cookie cutter. And yes, my mother's wake and funeral was, as we would label it, traditional. We had some highlights there. Emma did the eulogy. And at the time, you were pretty young.
I think I was 14, and I was very nervous. But the feeling of just standing up there and being able to honor her like that, it was unforgettable.
Who has a 12 or 14-year-old get up and do a eulogy? It was my way to chicken out, and Emma saved me.
Yeah.
She got a little bit extra in the allowance that week, but just the same, she earned it. But no, so, you know, it's those things that help people understand that a funeral does not have to be cookie cutter by any means.
I love that so much. What was your mom's name?
Maureen.
Maureen. Maureen sounds like a remarkable woman, and you guys planned a beautiful service for her. But I love the story about the playlist because my grandmother, we lost her. It'll be 11 years this fall. She was just a remarkable woman, and she was in the hospital for a really long time at the end. And she loved like traditional hymns. In fact, her favorite was the Johnny Cash CD with the hymns on it. So I made her this that she would have it to look at when she was in the hospital.
Oh, that's awesome.
It says, even for those of you who can't see, it says, even so, it is well with my soul, which was one of her favorites. And I still keep it in my office. And what's funny about that is that towards the end, she couldn't see it, but she knew it was there. And I keep it with me because it reminds me of her and it reminds me of how dignified and resilient she was at the end. But I loved what you said, too, about how it gives people kind of permission to think about their own services and their loved ones' services differently because they heard what you did for your mom. I think that's one of the huge values that we bring when we personalize services. They take on a life of their own.
Without a doubt. And that's why I felt it was important, not just because it was my mother, but I'm always looking to do something just a little bit different and see what we can do to make it a lasting memory.
Yeah. I love that. I love that so much. I'm going to start with you on this question, Emma, because I think you will have a really unique perspective. But what advice would you give to not even just, you know, funeral directors, but people starting out in funeral service in roles like yours and kind of admin staff and things like that? What advice would you give to them in those early days?
I would say, because this is kind of like advice to myself too, don't think that you have to, like, it is so important to follow in the footsteps of the people around you and to see kind of what they're doing. But at the same time, don't feel like it's cookie cutter. Everybody has their own strengths. And there's so many different aspects in this business. So kind of like finding what you're good at and kind of like channeling in on that. I feel like that's a really good piece of advice versus feeling like you have to be good at everything, because we all have our strengths, we all have our weaknesses. And it's really just a learning process.
I love that. Finding what you're good at. You know, there's kind of two schools of thought when it comes to professional development, either leaning into your strengths or working on your weaknesses. And I like the former. I think figuring out what you're good at, what brings you the greatest level of satisfaction, what you feel passionate about, what brings out the very best in you, I think is a really great way to think about your career, especially when you're early on. Dan, I'll ask you the same question. With the benefit of experience, what would your advice be?
So one of the things when we had this merger with the other funeral home, I was very fortunate that a gentleman who I consider a friend and like a big brother, he's got about 15, 17 years age-wise on me. And even though I'm creeping up on 30 years of doing this as a profession, I think it's important for anybody coming into the profession to have an open mind. And I just practice that, so I wouldn't be able to kind of sit here and preach about it, because when I came into this merger, I kind of from a backseat look to see what this other gentleman was doing, what I felt was right, wrong, or indifferent, and saw some of his success stories based on some of the things that he was doing. And that way I was able to adapt that to our day-to-day instead of just coming in and saying, okay, we're taking over here now and this is the way we're going to do it moving forward. It was very important to come in and just look objectively and say, okay, this is a great idea and this is something we're not doing now, but this is a spinoff. Here's how we can go and take that idea and make it even better. And I would say to anybody that's coming into our profession, come in, kind of digest it, let it all happen. And then if you feel that you could improve on a particular area, make that your niche. Make that your niche and, you know, press on and make it better.
I like that because you lead with learn as much as you can about what's happening now, what's going well, and do that work before you start to suggest changes. Get the context, understand what came before you, how things are done today. Not because that's the only right way to do it, but because you might learn some things that help inform a better solution for tomorrow. I love that perspective. I think that's great advice. And you, Dan, I mean, you've had a very successful career. You said you're coming up on 30 years. You've been very active in your state association, the National Association. You're now president-elect of the NFDA. You're very busy. I mean, you've got a family, you've got your volunteer work, you've got a business, and yet you still carve out time to volunteer in these organizations that support funeral service. Tell me why. Why is that a good use of your time?
It all goes back to my upbringing, my parents. If you put my resume next to my father's resume, I would say the only difference is the name at the top. And again, I kind of emulated everything I did after my father's success in what he did. I'm fortunate enough to still have him. Yeah, I don't have mom. You know, obviously I talk to her all the time, which hopefully nobody thinks I'm crazy for doing so. But just the same, they were incredible role models for me growing up. My mother, I mentioned how she was a union president and always fought for the rights of everyone else. And it was putting everybody else before our own family at times. And I still remember long before I met my wife, Danielle, and we had the kids, my sister and I were sitting at Christmas time at the table, and we have a small family. It was just my parents and my sister and I. And my mother said, next year, I'm not going through all of this just for the four of us. We're going to do a community-wide Christmas dinner. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be for less fortunate people. It could be for anybody. If somebody doesn't have some place to go, or, you know, family can't make it for whatever reason, we're going to get the community together so that, you know, we have the camaraderie. And that Christmas dinner is still going today. It's obviously run by different people, but my parents got that off the ground. We parlayed that. I took that principle that I shared before by just watching and then kind of having my own spinoff. I made my own spinoff, the home deliveries. And, you know, it's that kind of volunteer work, everything from the volunteer ambulance corps, being an EMT at the age of 17 years old, to where we are today. That's all based on the foundation that my parents laid for me.
I love that. I think I had a mentor when I was in college who did a lot of service trip organization for different groups of kids. And one of the things he said is, I don't want to go somewhere and paint the wall that's been painted three times before. I want to go somewhere where I'm going to make a difference. And I liked the stories that you told because they were things that really truly met needs and made a difference in the people that they were touching. And I think that kind of volunteering is so satisfying and so important in the community. I love that you spend time doing that.
Yeah, it means a lot that I can kind of continue on what my parents had done for me and said, here's the right way to do things.
Yeah. What a beautiful way to grow up for both of you. Well, we have two more questions, and these are questions we ask of every single podcast guest. So the first one, what are you guys reading right now?
Well, you had mentioned how crazy busy I am, and it's difficult to get through something. But one of the things that I've been trying to power through is an autobiography by Michael Richards, a.k.a. Kramer, from the show Seinfeld. It's a great read, and unfortunately, life gets in the way and you kind of have to put the book down at times, but that's something that I've been doing. And my wife's got one ready for me to go, another autobiography. That's what I typically are my go-tos or autobiographies.
You know, my dad was exactly the same way. And what made him more of a reader was audiobooks. And to this day, he'll have an audiobook playing. I'll go over, he'll be working on the cookie business or prepping some slides for a training he's doing, and there'll be an audiobook playing in the background. So I know you guys are so busy, it's hard to sit down and read. What about you, Emma? Are you reading anything exciting right now?
I'm not actively reading anything. Do you have any suggestions?
So many suggestions. Let's see, I just lent my copy of Atomic Habits. That's a great one.
Well, I've heard of that one. So should I read it?
Yes, I would read it. I would... Sorry, Dad. I would recommend Likeable Badass for any young woman that is entering her career. That book is incredible. It talks about how women kind of have to carefully navigate the professional landscape, balancing kind of assertiveness with making sure that they're also still pleasant. And in a way that I cannot explain, the author does a much better job. That's one I would recommend for sure. And then I also just finished Lisa Bowie's new book, Wake Up Calls. That was great. And you in particular, because you grew up in the funeral home, I think like me, you will find a lot of yourself in that story. And it's just beautifully written too. I read it on a work trip, and I was flying from Des Moines to Detroit, and I opened the book and I didn't look up until we landed in Detroit. I had no idea how much awesome time passed. So those would be my suggestions for
you. I appreciate it. I'll definitely have to look into that.
Yes, yes. Our last question that we ask all of our podcast guests is, what is giving you energy right now? And I'll let both of you answer in whichever order you want.
Want to go first?
I'll go first.
Yeah, you go first, Emma.
A little, yeah. The number one thing is totally coffee. Other than that, watching Dancing with the Stars.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do you have people that you watch it with? Like, I know there's like communities that watch it together.
Yeah, I don't have like a group of people, but my boyfriend and I watch it together.
I love that. Who are you rooting for this season?
That's a tough question, but probably Ezra.
Okay, Ezra and Jordan. All right, I will root for them too. I don't watch the show, but I might have to now. Dan, what about you? What's giving you energy?
Well, Major League Baseball playoffs. I love the system that has been put in place so that there's multiple games. And I am a diehard Yankee fan. And this is kind of, a big game tonight. And aside from watching TV, Major League Baseball, I love the opportunity this time of year to take our Camaro out and drop the top and just go for a ride in beautiful New England.
Yeah. What is the temperature up there?
Right now, it's, I don't know. What
in
do you think?
60s,
it's
right?
In the 60s, yeah. So.
Oh, you're so lucky. We have very stubborn summer in Iowa right now. Like, it's 88 degrees here right now, which it should not happen in October. That is not acceptable to me.
No.
But
just broke here a couple days ago. So we're in a good place right now.
Good, good. I might just have to come visit you this fall. I think we're going to skip straight from summer to winter. Emma and Dan, thank you guys so much for your time. I just really appreciate it. I know you guys are so busy and your perspective is so valued. So thank you for making time for this and sharing your stories, especially the stories about your mom and her service. That was really special, Dan. So I appreciate you talking to us about Maureen.
Really appreciate you having us on.